Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Efforting Sam Emiko, senior NBA writer for HoopsWire.com. But while we do that, a lot of people weighing in on the would you trade a Javier Garcia, or either one of them. 25-year-old starting pitcher, club control, cheap labor, both sub-3.5 ERA guys for a rental bat. We're going to make it hard. Yesterday, Jim Duquette said, look, it's going to be hard. It's going to sting to trade for an offensive bat. So we ask you a question that I think would make it difficult. It makes you reconsider it. I want an offensive bat more than anybody. I'm telling you, I'm 6 weeks away before I'm ready to make a decision on a Javier Garcia for a rental bat. Jordan weighing in, I'm not trading a potential all-star caliber pitcher, Garcia or Javier, for just a decent bat and a rental at that. I need a rental like a Manny Machado if I'm doing that, when he went to the Dodgers, or Max Scherzer when he went as well. And then somebody texting in on, or tweeting in rather, it's Adam, saying, if I'm going to trade for offense, I'm going to go and get a catcher. Sal Perez, JT Realmuto, I think Wilson Contreras would be another one you would throw in that mix as well. I'll trade a prospect and Javier for either of them. So the position part of it, I think, could be something that would factor into the equation as well.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. Look, when I look at this overall situation, and I think more and more about the conversation we had a segment ago, you don't want to mortgage the farm. And I get where you're coming from. In terms of when we start weighing out the best thing to do for this team, as much as I've been the one that's pushed the gas pedal, the quicker the better to be ahead of the game, I think because there's so many things up in the air with this team, I mean, the same way you would say, I want a bat.
Yeah.
And you know I've been pushing for bullpen. But I also am realistic in the fact that the bullpen's been okay enough for now while they played this stretch of teams that weren't, you know, above 500. So we don't have to make that move yet. But we really have to be more concerned about the pressing issues of what's going on with this offensive lineup. And I also think that the landscape itself means something.
Now,
I'm just saying, because the Yankees are going to come back, I believe, to the means a little bit.
They're hot.
They are red hot right now, but they almost always do. But are there going to be others? And of them, is it going to be just the Blue Jays? Or the Twins are going to win the division fine. They don't scare me. The teams that concern me are the Blue Jays, the Yankees, the teams with money and already an existing lineup and pitching staff that looks like they're ready to win it now.
Yeah, the Yankees to me more than the Blue Jays, because the Yankees have, I think, elite arms compared to a very good offense, whereas the Blue Jays, like, they have some pieces there with the pitching staff, but they're not Garrett
Cole. Don't you feel from a pitching staff, it's the same conversation we just had about, they're not ace level or top quality level, but those other names that you might not be so familiar with are the guys that are just like Garcia and Fromber or Lance or whoever you put in that kind of lower tier.
Yeah, I think that they're comparable in terms of the way that they're built. Now, Toronto's offense is performing right now, although they've kind of had some recent struggles as well. But their offense is performing at a higher level than the Astros. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Would you trade a Javier? Would you trade a Garcia for an offensive bat, significant offensive bat that would be a rental? Now, one of the things you mentioned was, like, you've been pro-reliever, which you can understand that certainly. I find it a little ironic that you would be willing to go Javier to trade and for an offensive bat when Javier would be taken away from the overall bullpen.
Okay, but you also know my focus has been the 7th, 8th, and 9th. The back end of the bullpen, the late inning guys. You can find other guys that can be your long reliever. Because the other thing that bothers me about Javier, and part of it it's not his fault, but because they've used him in both roles, is once you use him out of your bullpen, you normally better get as much as you can out of him, because you're not going to have him for almost as many days as if he was a starting pitcher. And that's not the norm for a relief pitcher, and that's not ideal for a relief pitcher. That's why I'm more willing to, even if I lose him out of my bullpen and as a starter, I'm okay with it, because he's almost like a starter in the bullpen, because once you use him, you got to wait multiple days to get him back.
1509 is trolling us, Blinkers. I'm willing to trade Odo for a bat rental. I'll trade Forrest Whitley for Realmuto or Wilson Contreras. Brother Barrett, thanks, y'all. Okay.
Yeah, let's.
All right, Brother Bear.
Happy
We appreciate your participation.
Evidently, happy hour started early today.
See, 669 says something that I think is pertinent to this conversation. Whether to trade Garcia or Javier or not depends a lot on the status of Lance McCullers. I think that should weigh in as well, which is, again, why I'm waiting. I'm waiting for the next 6 weeks to see if my pitching staff is still healthy and performing well, to see where Lance McCullers is at in the stage of his rehab, to see if the offense is coming back to life. I mean, I think Yuli's washed. I hope that I'm wrong. But maybe Yuli looks like 2021 Yuli for the next 6 weeks. And then I'm like, okay, well, I don't need to trade Garcia and Javier. So the Astros, and I think the division that they're in, puts them in a luxurious spot.
Absolutely,
where they can stand pat for a bit and kind of evaluate the landscape. And I think another variable is what you've talked about. See what the rest of the league is doing, too.
Yeah, you got to weigh all the different variables before you make the decision. Because once you make the decision, there's no turning back. And you don't want to, you know, mortgage the farm, per se, for the future and make a move that you find out later you didn't have to move. You didn't have to make, right? And that's why when I look at those two guys, at least, and I think the main reason why this is so topical for us and for the Astros fan is because your farm system is fairly depleted.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, everybody says, well, the Astros would love to have that guy, but they don't have what's necessary to pull off that kind of trade. Well, maybe not in AAA, but maybe they do if you consider that they'd be willing to part with one of these guys. So at least you have the option. You can still be in those conversations, even though you might not have that pitching prospect at the AAA level. You may have an established starter that's 25 years old that would be very, very appealing to a lot of teams that get you into that boardroom to have that conversation.
Jasper saying, here's a bad take for Branham's Boulevard. The Angels need to be sellers because they're terrible. Despite top-end talent, they need more depth. If they weren't in a division, it would be a win-win to trade some depth to them. I don't know what you're acquiring, though, from the Angels. Like, they're not going to trade Mike Trout. They're not going to trade Shohei Ohtani. You want nothing to do with Anthony Rendon and that albatross of a contract. So I really don't see that as a partnership coming up on the August 2nd deadline. James from Stafford, not trading either of them, not even if Correa was coming back in the deal. I think we've moved on from the Carlos Correa. Yeah. And I know that we're still just weeping at night and losing sleep over the fact that
mound visit.
He's not gracing our mounds with the visits that only he is capable of, you know, getting the most out of the Houston Astros. But I think that ship has sailed. But to James from Stafford's point, he's not trading a Christian Javier. He's not trading a Luis Garcia. Look, mid-20-year-old starters who have a sub-3.5 ERA that have club control for the next few years, those don't grow on trees.
No, they do not.
Those are very valuable in the landscape of Major League Baseball.
But here's the other thing, Jeremy, and here's where I know that, you know, people aren't going to like to hear this, but the same way that you brought up a Mark Pryor, you know what, is the same way that I will bring up to back up my point, Jabba Chamberlain, Steven Strasburg, right? Because as much as you say that, and it is extremely valuable, the also harsh reality of baseball in today's game is a majority of those guys are going to have major surgeries, and they're going to go through issues, and they may not be the pitcher that they are that you have now. And so, therefore, that could weigh into your decision, too, in saying that you have a surplus of them, and one of them may go. You know, at some point, the arm might go, the elbow might, something might happen. Injuries are going to happen, and they happen more frequently no matter how much you kind of handle with kid gloves the best young pitchers on your staff. And sometimes you weigh that into saying, if I can get a guy that helps me now and then, you know, take my chances with if these guys would have all been healthy or not, then I might be more willing to do that.
That can work the other way too, though, right? That can
it's
work.
A backup. If one gets hurt, you got the other one to fill in.
Yeah,
if
the odds are that one of them is going to go down with an injury, doesn't it help to have two of them instead of just having the one in the bat? So, like, the injury factor is something that, you know, you have to consider, because I agree with you. Like, pitching, you just pretty much automatically assume nowadays in baseball that you're going to have a starter while you have them, that they're probably going to lose a year, whether it's Tommy John or something else.
Like, don't you think that the philosophy across Major League Baseball has changed since then? Because when the ones we're alluding to, the Strasburg and the Jabba Chamberlains, they were the new hot name that was going to be the dominant pitcher in baseball. So they handed him with kid gloves. They balanced their innings. Strasburg 1 year wasn't allowed to pitch in the playoffs, and he was red hot because they wanted to make sure he was always going to be around. And lo and behold, both guys had Tommy John surgery. Both guys still had the injuries and needed the surgeries, and it didn't work out no matter how they handled him. So maybe on the flip side, that's why Luis Garcia, a year ago, even though he had the most innings he'd ever pitched in his life, they were like, but you know what? All you know is what you know, and right now he's pitching well. We're going to keep going.
There's no right answer for that. I mean, you can even, like, people are trying to track it down to, like, Little League now. I shouldn't say Little League because Little League's kind of dying. It's more club ball and travel ball and all that. But, you know, they're throwing tons of pitches from, like, 8 years old. You go watch an 8-year old select tournament, they're throwing curveballs.
I was going to say,
child abuse, in my opinion.
The rule when we were growing up, and I'm sure it was probably similar to when you were growing up, but before 12 years old, you better not even think about snapping off a curveball, and you damn well better not do it with a tennis ball or anything else. Nowadays, when you're watching all these young kids play, their second pitch is not a changeup. It is definitely moving, and it is definitely snapping their wrist, and it's putting strain on their elbow.
Whenever I see that, man, it makes me, like, ticked off. Like, you should not be – to me, I wouldn't even, like, be teaching that until, like, middle school age. Even middle school, I'm kind of like, maybe freshman in high school. But to me, there's no exact science. Like, you go look at the pro league in Japan.
But you get left behind.
That's true.
You know, the thing is you wait till your freshman year to be taught a curveball, but the guys that are your same age that have been throwing the curveball now have a status within the high school or whatever, and they know what they're getting, and maybe you get left behind.
I get that, but I think talent plays out at the end of the day. Yeah, like, I think if you're like mid-90s fastball, you're going to see mid-90s fastball, right? I don't know. I don't have the perfect answer for that, but it is an interesting conversation. But there is certainly, whenever you're not, you know, if you're younger than 12, I like that. That's a good spot, huh? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Would you trade a young arm for a rental bat? When we come back, if Davis Mills can be blank, I'm happy with him as the Texans quarterback for the foreseeable future. What does that blank have to be? You tell us. We'll kick it around, too. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
7-5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Davis Mills can be blank. If Davis Mills can be
I don't want
blank.
he ain't taking my job.
The word, not the name.
Oh.
If Davis Mills can be blank, I'm happy with him as the Texans quarterback for the foreseeable future. Insert that, Joel Blank, with a quarterback in the NFL. You can weigh in, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What does Davis Mills, what quarterback, if he can be blank, which quarterback, would he need to be in 2022 for you to stay away from drafting some of these prized prospects coming up in the 2023 NFL draft?
So here's where examples used in the past cannot be used in the current discussion, and that would be Kirk Cousins.
Oh, come on.
Because Kirk Cousins, when we initially talked about what could be the ceiling or what could be a good comp for Davis Mills, is one thing. But when you start adding the element of that would keep you from drafting another quarterback, I think you have to be better than Kirk Cousins. I think you have to be able to take it to another level up. Because otherwise, even if you got Kirk Cousins, they had RG3, and they drafted RG3 higher. And you know, obviously he's gotten paid like a big-time quarterback. But for the most part, I think most teams would say, I'm always open to, and the Vikings have been very honest about the fact that they've been considering moving up from Kirk Cousins. So I think that's not good enough. Now, if you take the next tier up, and we were having this conversation this morning, I was looking around the league trying to think of any other guys, and the guy that Brendan focused on immediately that I think that is probably the one that would get me to start thinking that along the lines of skipping on drafting a quarterback is David Carr's brother, as you refer to him, and Derek Carr in Vegas, because of the fact that he's more than a game manager. He could take it to another level. He can win games and get you to the playoffs. He can do enough for me to say, okay, I'm willing to ride with this guy because maybe he even takes it up another notch somewhere down the line.
I think that Brendan, whenever we had this conversation, whenever I came in, like he asked me the question and didn't tell me the name that y'all talked about. He said, I think we're all going to have the same answer. I was like, oh, so he said Kirk Cousins? And he's like, no. And then I was like, okay, well, my answer would be David Carr's brother, Derek. And that's like, that's what we said. That's what we were talking about as well. Like, to me, that's still a difficult one, but to me, like, if you're trying to answer this question and having an honest conversation about it, you need to find the worst one you'd be willing to live with. Like, if Davis Mills can be Pat Mahomes, yeah, I'd be happy for him to be the Texans quarterback for the foreseeable future. But you have to find the bottom of that conversation, the very last quarterback of NFL quarterbacks who if Davis Mills could be. And I think that the landscape could also change over the next 10 months. Like, you know, if Davis Mills is that level, but you still didn't win a whole lot of games, and C.J. Stroud is, you know, looking like he's the next, you know, stud quarterback in the NFL, I think it changes the conversation. But if Davis Mills, to me, I think that it's, I agree with you. I think that it is David Carr's brother.
And you
Derek.
See why I said you can't, in this conversation, it can't be Kirk Cousins.
Well,
because if it's Kirk Cousins, if game manager is the ceiling, then why wouldn't I try and get someone that could be actually be higher than that? If I see a guy, like you said, like Stroud, and I see him and go, you know what? He's more than a game manager in the NFL. The high side for this kid is he could be one of the top seven quarterbacks in the league. Then I still got to take him.
See, to me, like I was trying to find a quarterback around the top 10, like right on the cusp of the top 10, maybe a little bit outside. I think that it is David Carr's
brother. Your boy is in the conversation, but dynamically, in terms of Kyler Murray. But in terms of he bring, it's a different dynamic with him with running and all the other things he does.
If Davis Mills could play to the capability of Kyler
Murray.
That's
what I'm saying. It's not, no, not relevant.
I'm not talking about like playing style. I'm just saying results. If Davis Mills could provide the results that a Kyler Murray provides you, you'd be over the moon. You would think that you had your franchise quarterback. Kyler Murray's
There's
about
people still doubting Kyler Murray being that franchise quarterback.
But he's also about to make top five quarterback money a year before any quarterback in NFL history usually gets that money.
But they're kind of backed into a corner. They have to.
But they also believe in him. They also believe in him. Like if they don't do it, what are they going to be left with? Like if they
but I think that's where they're backed into it. I don't think that they're sold.
They could trade him.
I don't think they're sold that he is a franchise that he's going to be a top five, top seven franchise quarterback. Because he still makes a lot of wild throws. The playoffs was a huge disappointment for a lot of people and an eye-opener in terms of how he handled the pressure and the way he handled everything after that in the offseason. But look, I get it. I'm just saying because of the fact that you went out and got him after already drafting a first-round quarterback the year before, the way you got him, the way you've given him the keys to the car and everything like that, you're backed into the point you almost have to keep him and pay him.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying that they're pod committed to Kyler Murray, which is true. They are pod committed to Kyler Murray, and we have difference of opinions on where we think Kyler Murray ranks on the list of NFL quarterbacks, which I think at this point we're probably going to need new information before either one of us budges off the Kyler Murray and what we think of him. But what does Davis Mills have to be? Who does Davis Mills have to be for you to be happy with him as the Texans quarterback for the next few years, where you're not drafting a quarterback in which looks like a stacked quarterback class in the NFL draft of 2023? 713-780-ESPN. Killer B's quarterback is David Carr's brother, Derek.
When I was talking on the phone to Joel about it, though, I really feel like there's – the gap between Kirk Cousins and Derek Carr includes zero quarterbacks.
See, I think I'm higher on Kirk Cousins than y'all are, but I do think that's the line of demarcation.
Right. I mean, and when I was talking to you about it, what I kind of found myself thinking is Kirk Cousins is a line where you go, okay, maybe not my favorite situation, but I'm okay with Davis Mills as the quarterback. Whereas if it's Derek Carr, I go, I'm pretty happy with Derek Carr. I am. I'm not looking. That doesn't mean, an Andrew Luck type comes around and you say, I don't want that guy.
Right.
But I'm not looking for a quarterback if I have a guy who I think can be Derek Carr.
It's not going to slam the door if you're at number three and you think there's a bona fide Pro Bowl first team level quarterback to where you would still be willing to make the move, but you're not going out of your way to be like, oh, we need a quarterback in this draft or we're screwed.
Yeah, but isn't it also fair to say, too, that in feeling the way that we feel and getting a guy like that, you're also going to play it out for his first contract to where as you build the rest of the roster and you see the rest of this team develops, you still have the ability to change your mind before you get into the Cardinals-Kyler Murray situation and you just got to go, you know what, whether we believe it or not, it's put up or shut up time. We got to pay this guy.
You want to see it through with their rookie deal.
Yep.
It's kind of like the Javier and Luis Garcia conversation to a bit as well, right? Because now you're talking about cheap labor, a solid product, and you're trying to build a team around it. We saw Russell Wilson and like how good the Seahawks were whenever he was on a rookie deal because it allowed him to spend so much money elsewhere. People on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, they're talking about Carson Wentz and Ryan Tannehill. See, I wouldn't put Wentz and Tannehill anywhere near that list. Like if Davis Mills can be blank, I'm happy with him as the Texans quarterback for, let's just say, the life of his rookie deal. If Davis Mills is Ryan Tannehill, I am looking for the quarterback at the first opportunity I have.
There's a reason why Tennessee drafted a quarterback this year. You're never going to feel comfortable and secure with Ryan Tannehill as your starter, and he's giving you ammunition as to why you shouldn't either. That's the same thing. I mean, look, it's kind of a tough call on Carson Wentz because if you got the Carson Wentz pre-injury, there's a lot of reasons why you would want that guy, especially with where your roster is right now. But if you got the Carson Wentz we saw in Indy, the Carson Wentz that we've seen since the injury, I don't think anybody would want to sign up for that and say, I'm not going to look at another quarterback.
See, TNT saying, if I'm happy if Mills is Ryan Tannehill, get to the playoffs. We may not win it, but gives us a puncher's chance. I think you're right. I think that's why Tennessee's looking, okay, let's roll the dice on a Malik Wilson. Maybe he can be, or Malik Willis. Maybe he can be better than a Ryan Tannehill in 2 to 3 seasons. And then he also said Davis Mills equals Carson Wentz. So I'm not sure that he means that he'd be happy if Mills is Wentz. We might be taking him out of context there a little bit. 713-780-ES. ESPN. If Davis Mills can be who? I'm happy with him as the Texans quarterback. Let's just say for the remainder of his rookie contract. Couple of people, Mickey T and 2598 saying Alex Smith. I'm off on that. Like if he's Alex Smith and Alex Smith, friend of the show, he's a heck of a guy. We had him on. He loves the Killer Bees. Listens to us every now and then. I'd be wanting to move on. Kansas City. They were going to the playoffs with Alex Smith. And there they go, trading up for a Pat Mahomes. So, like, I would be in that same spot. If Davis Mills is Alex Smith, that's not good enough for me.
He was, like, 35 in Kansas City, though. That's
but that was
fair.
Also his peak. That was probably also his best years.
I think it's more synonymous to say, if you're Alex Smith, aren't you Kirk Cousins?
I feel like that's a little disrespectful for Alex Smith.
See,
like,
I don't.
He might be that. He might be the
gap. I think
gap
that's the
between...
same reason why that you can't pull the can't unequivocally say, I wouldn't look at another quarterback.
See, he also had the good years in San Francisco.
But that's what Brennan was saying.
Yeah. I like where Jeremy was going. I think Alex Smith is the gap between Kirk Cousins and Derek Carr.
He is. Alex Smith is the line of demarcation.
So like, my answer is yes. I would be fine with that.
See, the thing is like so, and getting to TNT's point, even on Tannehill, like if I'm watching this team or if this is my team, and I say I need one drive with one quarterback, and it doesn't have to be that he makes all the big time plays and makes plays nobody else can make or just heroic plays. But I need a guy that I feel I can trust making that drive to put me in a position to win that game. I don't think Ryan Tannehill. I don't think Kirk Cousins. I've just seen enough of them do the opposite that I think that's why I wouldn't do it. I would have faith in Alex Smith. I would have faith in Derek Carr now more so than before, but I'd still have apprehension.
Yeah, see, I don't know. To me, like, I need a guy who I can trust to get me to the playoffs. Like, to me, it's not the last-minute drive, right? Like, if Davis Mills is a David Carr's brother, Derek, where he's capable of getting you to the playoffs, like, I'm willing to give it a shot through the rest of his rookie contract. I'm torn on Alex Smith, I'll be honest with you. Like, Kirk Cousins is the opposite of that. Like, I think I like Kirk Cousins more than y'all, but... He's also not – I know he's been to the playoffs, but you're not getting to the playoffs because of Kirk Cousins.
Right,
getting to the playoffs because of players around Kirk Cousins.
I think you could say this last season that for the most part, especially with Jacobs being hurt and some of the things that they went through, all the things they went through, they got to the playoffs with a large part of it being because of Carr.
713-780-ESPN. Let us know what you think. If Davis Mills can be blank, which NFL quarterback, I'm happy with him as the Texans quarterback through the rest of his rookie contract for the foreseeable future. You lay out the parameters. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We'll get to some of your texts. If you want to call, you can call us too when we come back. Skiller Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN
97.5. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
If Davis Mills can be blank, you'd be happy with him as the Texans quarterback.
Your radio show would suck, but I mean, he might be able to play quarterback.
We have to find a replacement player.
Yeah.
But if Davis Mills can be insert quarterback name, I'm happy with him as the Texans QB. Some people saying Alex Smith. I think your point about Derek Carr and David Carr's brother, Derek, is that like he was probably the best player on that Raiders offense.
That's what I said, yeah, a year ago, you could say Waller, but like you mentioned, he was hurt. Jacobs was dinged up. Hunter Renfro, to the year he had, another great year, but it takes a quarterback getting him the football. Mm-hmm. You think about all the off the field. Think about everything they had to endure while they were still trying to be an offensive football team week to week when their head coach, who was also their play caller, was suddenly and abruptly ripped out of that organization. And then it was musical chairs with your head coach, your new head coach, and getting to know him and trying to figure all of that out and get to the bottom of that. Then one of your best receivers goes and kills someone driving a car.
Sheesh, Joel.
And you're so that puts a monkey wrench in your offense, I'm just saying.
No, you're right. I mean, there was a lot of adversity last year, and they still got to the postseason. It was quite the run. It was also David Carr's brother's best year. Like, I think if you're talking about Derek Carr 2 years ago, I don't think we would say this. I think Todd the Show asked a good question. If Kirk Cousins was on the Chiefs, would Kirk Cousins be the same as Alex Smith? See, yeah, I really do. I think the Chiefs wouldn't have missed a beat if they had Kirk Cousins and not Alex Smith. I don't think San Francisco would have really missed a beat if they had Kirk Cousins and Alex Smith, because those teams are winning not so much because of Alex Smith. I'm not going to go as far to say in spite of them, but they have so many good pieces around them. Kansas City was loaded offensively whenever he was there. San Francisco was a run-first offense and had the
with a lot of talent. Offensive line matters.
Mm-hmm.
Skill players matter. And if you got those, a lot of times that's why a game manager shouldn't be a cuss word.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's different now in the NFL than it used to be, because it almost feels like you have to have pretty close to star power to win a Super Bowl. And Tom Brady might have changed this conversation quite a bit because he's won a brunt of them. But there really hasn't been in quite some time where there wasn't a really good quarterback that won a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. No, the game's changed, too. We know that as it becomes more of a pass-happy offense, now a game manager might have too much to manage, because you've got to manage play calls that plays you're going to have to execute that you weren't required to when game manager was a thing, when it was the Brad Johnsons and the Trent Dilfers and even the Joe Flacco-esque type players. You only had to do so many things, and the people around you and the defense and other things was going to carry you the rest of the way. Now, because of the way the offense has changed, because of the dominance of the pass game, you can't just be a simple game manager and get away with it and probably take teams to the levels that they used to take them.
7095 says Matt Ryan. I would take Matt Ryan in a heartbeat. I think Matt Ryan, over the course of his career, has been one of the top seven-ish quarterbacks.
Took his team to the Super Bowl, in a lot of people's minds, should have won that Super Bowl.
Won an MVP that year, too, right?
I think that's correct, and got the ball to the guys that he knew were supposed to get the football to. Yes, he had teams that had running games and good receivers and other things, but you still got to be the guy that executes the plays and put the ball where it needs to be put. And he did it for a long period of time, too. So if you're a Texans fan, you would be ecstatic, I would think, with a Matt Ryan type.
That's an easy one. TNT saying he would die on the Ryan Tannehill train. 1706 says, on the bottom level, if he can be Tannehill, it will be a success, as in he will need to show that much potential, as opposed to Tannehill pretty much has plateaued. On the top, if he can be Matt Ryan, which is where I see him getting to in the future if he is properly groomed and developed. I mean, Matt Ryan's a no-brainer. That's obvious to slam dunk. Like, Tannehill, to me, like, maybe he could be a Ryan Tannehill. Maybe that would be a win for Davis Mills. Like, I'm not even going to say that 1706 is wrong. Maybe that is where Davis Mills lands, is Ryan Tannehill. But if Ryan Tannehill is my quarterback, I'm not going to be happy with him as the Texans quarterback for the foreseeable future.
I think that's scary, because I think that in terms of just the way they look and the way it feels, I think that Davis Mills could be Ryan Tannehill. But I think if you're a Texans fan, you want more than that.
And also, you have to, and he also follows, and please be sure to understand, I look at, just like you look at Ryan Tannehill being the bottom. But if it's Ryan Tannehill, I'm ready to move on and find somebody else. 1185 saying, dead even to me. I know a lot of people would disagree with the Kirk Cousins, but they were saying the same thing about Matt Stafford before Matt last year. See, Stafford post-Super Bowl would be a no-brainer. Now, Stafford, before he got traded to the Rams and before he won a Super Bowl, would he be in the conversation for this debate?
See, and I think he would, but simply because I saw him play more than most, except for the fact that Brendan's on the show, because, he reruns games that he's already watched to stack them in his resume. I just watched him twice a year, and I know that if he had more talent around him, he did his job multiple times against Green Bay, against good Green Bay teams, and should have had a chance to win. And that's all you can ask for of your quarterback, because he made passes and he made tight window throws and he made the long balls and the back shoulder fades. And he just didn't have a team around him that was capable of sustaining a win. So I think even that name came up this morning when we were talking about this. I said even pre-Super Bowl Matt Stafford, to me, would be a huge win for the Texans.
Lamont tweeting us in saying, if Davis Mills can be Matt Schaub 2009 through 2022. You would take that in a heartbeat.
You should, because at the point where your roster is right now, that would be ideal for you.
Yeah, because, I mean, Schaub was really good in those few years. The way that it all ended and all the pick sixes, those were kind of something that leaves a bad thought in your mind whenever you look at the career that Matt Schaub had with the Houston Texans. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. If Davis Mills can be blank, insert your quarterback, I'm happy with him as the Texans QB. Now, 8755 mentions three names. And look, I'd be happy with all three of these guys, but I don't think that Davis Mills could potentially be these guys. Andrew Luck, that would be obvious.
Not happening.
Justin Herbert, Russell Wilson.
I don't think it's happening with her. I don't think it's happening with any one of the three guys. I think the closest comparison you get is that Andrew Luck went to Stanford. See, other than that, I think that you're not bringing up comps that are fair comps.
You need to find the bottom end of the scope of what you could live with, but it's the worst one of what you can live with,
right? Because that's what I keep going back to. The fact that you have to be so okay with this guy that you won't look at another quarterback, right? Like, you got to be engaged. You know, you're not dating anymore, or even becoming exclusive. You have to become engaged to be married to this quarterback, so much so you can't look at anybody else. And I think that that's where I'm really apprehensive to say some of these guys would make me not want to still think about Stroud or Bryce Young or whoever the flavor of the week is with your personnel department, to say that, I won't even look at them, when we even know the Patriots, when they had Brady, were willing to look at others.
Yeah, they drafted quarterbacks almost like you would buy stocks. Like, they were drafting value plays in the third, fourth round, hoping that they could trade them in the future for a second round or even a Brady replacement, like Jimmy Garoppolo. Some people thought he was going to replace.
Right, and in most cases, either way, it worked out for them.
Yeah, usually they got some pretty good return on their investment. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo comes up. Could you live with Davis Mills being a Jimmy Garoppolo for the next few years?
It's an interesting call, because I think somewhere down the road something happened to Jimmy G. I think that Jimmy G, when they drafted him and they were grooming him, seemed like a guy that had all the tools. And at a certain point, it seemed like someone robbed his tool shed. Suddenly some of those tools just kind of went wayward. And that's what bothers me in that. Because the young Jimmy G, who could run a little bit, and he really had a good concept of how to run an offense and all the reads and all the throws, I think... Again, where this team currently sits with its roster, I could be okay with Jimmy G.
Yeah, I think Jimmy G's pretty close to that line, too. Jimmy G had some good years, and I think San Francisco might have dumbed Jimmy G down a little bit by design.
Quite possible.
Because they kind of we're going to live on the run. We don't want you making mistakes. You just kind of put the ball where it needs to be.
Boy, if he could put the ball where it needed to be long to Emmanuel Sanders, they might be Super Bowl champs.
0997 Sam Phillip Rivers. That's way too high.
Yeah, no way.
Phillip Rivers at a time was, one of the top three quarterbacks in football. He's going to be a Hall of Famer someday as well. Somebody said Eli Manning. That's probably a little bit too high for me, too. Somebody said 2016 Marcus Mariota. That's a no for me, dog.
Yeah, I'm going to say no as well.
So how about that 1 year of Vince Young in Tennessee?
His rookie season when he ran into the Houston Texan ramp at NRG Stadium whenever he ran it in overtime.
A
walk-off touchdown by Vince Young after everybody in Houston wanted the Texans to draft Vince Young.
I was in the building that day.
Were you?
The roar of that crowd was like a home game.
Yeah.
It was crazy how many Houstonians loved Vince Young scoring that touchdown.
Vince Young was such a legend in Houston that I'm glad that he had fruition in college and won the national championship game, and I'm glad that he had some success in the NFL. But, Vince Young's a name that would be living forever in Houston sports lore. Mm-hmm. Somebody saying Drew Bledsoe. That's so high end. I would love for Drew
Mills
to be Drew Bledsoe.
Because they just remember the end and how it transitioned to Brady. People forget how good Drew Bledsoe was for a good period of time.
Drew Bledsoe was very good. He was very good for a while. He was very good after he left New England, too.
Yeah.
Somebody said Vinny Testaverde.
I think that's too high.
You think Testaverde's too high?
Yeah, Testaverde had a really... Again, people forget he had a really good NFL career.
Colin Kaepernick.
It's two different dynamics. I think Kaepernick...
I think you can look at the results, though, because it is very two different players. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Again, in a short period of time, he took them to a Super Bowl, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think you could do a lot worse.
713-780-ESPN.
But again, I say you could do a lot worse, but then I got to catch myself and go, but if it means I can't look at another quarterback, I don't know that I'm willing to do that.
See, even David Carr's brother, Derek, is borderline for me.
It is.
To me, that's the very last quarterback I would take ahead of, like, I can't look at other quarterbacks. Like, that makes it very difficult. But you can keep them coming in. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. If Davis Mills can be, you insert the quarterback, I'm happy with him as the Texans quarterback. Who is the lowest NFL comp that you would be happy with? 713-780-3776. Also, when we return, non-quarterbacks on every team that those teams cannot afford to lose. Who is that for the Houston Texans? We'll kick it around when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Eric texting or tweeting in, if you're telling me that it's impossible for Mills to get to Herbert's level, then it's hard. It's impossible for Mills to prevent me from drafting a quarterback. See, that's the thing. It's like maybe we were too lenient on that low bar because David Carr's brother, Derek, out in Las Vegas. I mean, if you feel that C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young's going to be like a top five level quarterback in the NFL, then you'd probably make that move.
I think the other thing, too, is what we were just talking about in terms of the way the game has changed. With the way, even from the time that Derek Carr came in to now, with the overemphasis on RPOs and being able to not just extend plays, but, you know, make plays with your legs, I think that that factors into how offensive coordinators not only pick plays and put together their playbook, but of the kind of quarterback that they want to execute their offense. And that's why, as the offense grows in the NFL and changes, I think that's why you look at a different type quarterback, and that's why a Young or a Stroud might be a guy that's more predicated to play now and be better for you and cause you to have to look at them, no matter what a Derek Carr type would on your roster.
I think it's the ability to just to sling it around the yard because like I don't even know if I need somebody who has the ability to leave the pocket. Like Matt Stafford's winning Super Bowls. He doesn't leave the pocket much. Tom Brady has won more Super Bowls than literally anybody, and he's still in this era. So he doesn't really leave the pocket
too. But those teams were also just completely overstocked with every resource you needed.
Patriots really weren't whenever he was winning with the Patriots. Like, they didn't have tons of offensive weapons. His best offensive weapon ever was Randy Moss.
They always had a really good offensive line. Because remember, he rarely got touched.
No, they didn't. And that's part of, too, the quick release. Like, there's so many variables that play a part into it. Good offensive line, the quarterback ability to get rid of the football quickly. And it opens up a different conversation. Like, do you need a quarterback in 2022 that has the ability to leave the pocket and extend plays? I think you can go either way. Pat Mahomes was somebody that can do that, and he won a Super Bowl.
And I'm more referring to specifically like RPOs. Like if you're going to call RPOs and you're going to call the amount of plays where your quarterback's going to make a decision based on what the defense is showing you, I think in a lot of cases you're going to need a guy that's going to be athletic that can move around with his legs.
To me, that comes down to the OC and knowing the personnel. Like if you have a Deshaun Watson, you're going to flash some of that. You're going to show some of that. If you have Lamar Jackson, you need to flash and
but
show
ideally,
some of that.
But ideally, in a draft meeting, before a draft, if you say, hey, in order for me to be the guy you hired and execute the way I want to run an offense, I know this guy's been able to do this for us. I need a guy that gives me a different variable. That's why I'm still looking at quarterbacks.
I think the league is going that way. It's obviously a popular trend. We see more of that now than we've ever seen it before. I'm still not totally bought into that style of football. I still think that you have to have the ability to beat a defense from the pocket. And Stafford showed that last year. Yes, they had a tremendous amount of talent around him. Brady has shown that. Pat Mahomes, who has the ability to leave the pocket and kind of makes him a unicorn there, can beat you from the pocket as well. Like the guys that I look at that concern me, like if they're ever going to win a Super Bowl, Russell Wilson's one. Lamar Jackson's one.
I was
going
to say Lamar Jackson's the first one that came to my mind.
Lamar Jackson. I'll be honest with you. Deshaun Watson's one. I don't love the fact that Deshaun Watson can't get rid of the football on time. I don't love the fact that Deshaun Watson doesn't know where to go with the football, you know, in a three-step drop. Like everything Deshaun Watson does, he's leaving the pocket. You know, he's having to run around. He gets sacked a lot. There's a lot of negative play in that style of football, and you start to stack up that many negative plays in one game, good luck winning a game.
I don't disagree with either one of those for every reason you gave and even more. I mean, I think that, you know, Deshaun, for all the times that he was stacking up, all the different stats he was stacking up, a lot of times his team was only winning four games in a season. And there's something to be said about from extending plays to not taking the play that maybe is a one-yard gain or a small loss and instead turning yourself into a situation where either you get hurt and crushed or you lose, like, you know, 7 to 10 yards and you put yourself in a really bad situation. And I think from Lamar's standpoint, he's gotten better as a passer. But I think that at a certain point, he still has to be able to make the pinpoint throws, mm-hmm. so it's more of a 50-50 proposition of he's a great runner, but he's also a really good thrower of football.
So much of an offense is a march down the field. You know, like, it's great to have the explosive home run plays of a Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson breaking out a 50-yard play. But whenever it's choppy and you're not sustaining drives, I think that's a very hard way to win football games. And we'll see. But the NFL is moving more to those quarterbacks, to your point. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Who are some non-QBs on every team that they cannot afford to lose? Ran across this looking at the NFL stuff on CBS. They listed one non-quarterback on every single team that that team cannot afford to lose, like the Titans, Derrick Henry.
Obviously,
you can't afford to lose a Derrick Henry on the Titans. We saw that last year. They actually sustained it okay. But, you know, you get to the playoffs. Henry was back for that. Wasn't quite the same. Colts listed Michael Pittman Jr. Like,
I would say Jonathan Taylor.
Exactly. I can afford to lose Michael Pittman Jr. if it means that I'm keeping Jonathan Taylor. So that's a pretty egregious one that I saw. It's like, all right, I'm not agreeing with that one. For the Houston Texans, who would you say? Like, who is the one player you cannot afford to lose that's not a quarterback?
Laremy Tunsil?
See, that's Laremy Tunsil's on this list, but I disagree with it. And here's the write-up they had. Houston's roster devoid of much star talent, but if the new regime wants any chance at developing Mills as the actual quarterback of the future, the Pro Bowl left tackle will likely be key to keeping him upright after missing all but five games in 2021.
That's the way I was thinking. I was actually thinking about it just from protecting the backside of Davis Mills. I have to have a guy that's going to be the best option to do that.
So, yeah, so they swing it back to the quarterback again. And, look, I get the idea and the mindset of, okay, we need to protect Davis Mills to get intel on Davis Mills. We just spent 30 minutes talking about what does Davis Mills have to be in order for the Texans to have their hands off and keep their eyes away of some of the quarterback prospects that are coming up in the 2023 NFL draft. But it's hard for me to pick a veteran here.
Like, who'd you take, Stingley?
Stingley would be... I'd probably go Stingley is number one on that list because you've spent the most draft capital for Stingley. But I'm going the young players more than I'm going the veterans. Like, I don't think, literally, like, you can't, like, if you lost any of these players, you're still not going to be a good football team. If you kept all of these players, you're still not going to be a good football team. Laremy Tunsil did not play many games last year. The Texans won four games. If Laremy Tunsil plays the entire 2021 season, how many more games do the Texans win? A half game more? One game more?
I'm not even saying about wins and losses. I'm saying about if you have any hopes of a long-term future with a quarterback that you drafted with hopes of some kind of a future with your team, that it could be completely screwed up. And here's the other thing that would affect that. It's not just about, like you're saying, for this year, but here we go again, because now if Tunsil gets hurt, then all that you've said that you looks like you're going to do and keep players in their positions on the offensive line goes out the window, because now Howard goes from your right tackle to your left tackle, and here we go again. Now we're just going to start switching everybody. Now the whole offensive line becomes a disaster.
See, Titus Howard, though, is almost like one of the reasons I wouldn't mind if we're having this conversation, where I wouldn't hate the idea of losing Laremy Tunsil.
That's what I'm saying. You slide him over, but now you're starting...
Yeah, you're playing musical chairs there, and your overall offensive line, the unit, is taking a hit. But, like, I almost feel like there's more of a, like, drop-off from right tackle to right tackle number two than from Laremy Tunsil to Titus Howard. I'm not trying to put Titus Howard in the Laremy Tunsil conversation.
He filled in nicely.
I think left tackle is the best position for Titus Howard. I think that is his best position that he plays, but he's not better at left tackle than Laremy Tunsil is. For me, I'm going the young guys. But, like, the Texans could literally afford to lose any player for me. So if, like, I had my druthers, I'd rather lose a veteran than a rookie. I do like where your mind's at, though, in terms of, like, okay, well, I can't pick a quarterback as the player that I'm going to lose, but I need to know what Davis Mills is going to be for the future and the, you know, where this organization's going to be. 713-780-ESPN. Who would it be for you? 5399 saying Cooks, if you want to see what Davis Mills is all about.
I mean, I actually thought about it for a half second simply because of the fact that he is the one proven commodity that you have as a resource for your quarterback that you're evaluating. You know, I mean, you still don't know everything you've got in Nico Collins, and you're hoping he takes a step up this year. And Mechie, you don't know when he's going to be ready, and he's a rookie coming in, so you can't expect that much from him. And the other guys on your roster aren't really going to be difference makers for you.
See, I think the Stingley conversation, too, is even more for, like, the benefit of Nick Caserio. Where, like, if you were to lose, like, a number three draft pick, it, like, that's the guy that you can't afford to lose from, like, an ability type of thing. Like, if you watch Derek Stingley the first 4 or 5 weeks and you're like, man, this isn't the dude from LSU 3 years ago. This is just a guy. Like, that to me would be philosophic or, like, psychology-wise, devastating.
Here's the other one. Catastrophic if he's not only the guy you lose, but you lose him with the same foot that he hurt. Because now everybody's pointing the finger at Nick Caserio going, this is why we said if you had 1A and 1B at corners and one guy didn't have Liz Frank, you take the guy that didn't have Liz Frank. So that would be a catastrophic from a franchise perspective. If Stingley was the guy that you couldn't afford to lose,
right.
But when you lost him, it was the foot.
A few other teams around the NFL, Cowboys, they list Micah Parsons as the player that they could not lose. And somebody actually texted us in. I hate the Cowboys, but the Cowboys without CeeDee Lamb would really be a mess. They'd have a lot of second-tier receivers, but only one clear-cut number one because Cooper is gone. They would not have a clear-cut number one.
I was going to say, because of the fact that the way the wide receiver room has changed in Dallas, I hear you.
Right.
But I also believe that defense was taken to a different level by two guys, and the main guy was Micah Parsons.
And if you have a quarterback that you're playing is paying as much as Dak Prescott, that dude needs to elevate some pass targets. Mm-hmm. Like, I very much believe a quarterback in the NFL, the very best quarterbacks in the NFL, and this is Brendan's point whenever he argues for Matt Stafford, if we're being completely honest with you, are guys that elevate their targets. You know, if you look at the Matt Stafford argument, well, Calvin Johnson was a really good football player. Didn't necessarily matter who was throwing the ball to him, but career years with Matt Stafford. Mm-hmm. Cooper Kupp was a very good receiver before Matthew Stafford got there, but his career went to new heights with Matt Stafford as opposed to Jared Goff. Like, Pat Mahomes is going to be making players better. How much better did he make Tyreek Hill? That's why I'm very interested to see what Tyreek Hill does in Miami. How about Devontae Adams? How much was his career elevated?
See, here's the problem I was going to say. In the Green Bay situation, I don't know that I'd put Rodgers in the same boat, but it's a catch-22. Because will he put the ball where it needs to be put so that anybody could elevate their game by just reaching out and catching it? Yes. But he's also going to focus on his number one guy more than any other guy in the league, probably. And that could be a detriment because now you're not going to do what you could have done with others because you're not going to be looked at or had the ball thrown your way as much. Because if you look at the percentages with Devontae Adams, it was like 80% of the time he was looking Devontae's way.
Right. Packers, they lift Elgton Jenkins.
Offensive lineman?
You disagree with that one.
I do. I was going to say Aaron Jones.
Yeah, Aaron Jones. Well,
now I know you got A.J. Dillon. You got A.J. Dillon. Yes, you do. Dillon. But only one of them catches the ball out of the backfield like Aaron Jones, and Aaron Jones caught a ton of footballs out of the backfield.
I would have said Randall Cobb. 713.
Oh, my God.
I'm kidding. 713-780-ESPN. All right, when we return, it's everybody's favorite show. It's everybody's favorite game show. It's everybody's favorite contest. Who said it? We'll listen and we'll talk about some of the quotes of other ESPN personalities. What they said during this week, it's the Killer Bees, Blank and Branham, going up against the reigning, the defending, the undisputed champion, Paul Gallant. He kept the title last week with a draw. The rematch next. Who said it? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.